Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in the Standard, 4-star review in the Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's been told he'll be sent off if he wears his armband. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Hey, hello, Leicester Square Theatre. Hello. Welcome. Oh, thank you very much. A lovely, lovely, much better than last week's audience. Welcome. Keep on getting it wrong. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to David Beckham the other day, and he said that the Qatar government has said he's not allowed to say anything at all. But that Victoria calls it Rallastavas. So we'll see if that's going to catch. I mean, Jesus Christ, Qatar. I need a beer if I'm going to let someone bum me. Come on, what's wrong with you? Don't you know what football, being a football fan, is all about? I'd watch it from home if I didn't want to get drunk and suck someone off. I watched the game this afternoon. England won quite well, 6-2 or something like that. I think that's a good win, apparently. But controversy over the not wearing their rainbow armbands. They'd have got a yellow card if they'd worn them. I'm split because, of course, they took the knee beforehand, which is good. But then they didn't do the armband. But you know, if they're allowed to make gestures. But they're not allowed to wear armbands. After taking the knee, couldn't they just like pretend to wank each other off though? It was something like, well, while one of them's down. Just do that. I mean, I would suggest actually wanking each other off, but I wouldn't want the team to start all drowsy and everything. You know, they could. Maybe they could just wank off the subs. And they'd be double subs, wouldn't they? There'd be subs in every. And I wondered about them just wearing the rainbow stuff underneath, like the Nazis in The Eagle Has Landed. That is going to go over the heads of most of my very young audience, which will be fine until one of the kids falls into the stream and one of the football players has to jump in and gets caught up in the water wheel and mangled. No? Okay, my references. It's a great film.
It's a very good film. Look, we had a fantastic podcast last week that went out last week. This week's podcast is going to go out straight away as well to prove that we only do one a week. People started saying there's two a week. Last week it was Joe Lycett, and this week it's going out. So that proves that we only do one a week. And fantastic interview with Joe Lycett. He talked about the whole stunts got played out. Now I knew in advance exactly what was going to happen. And keeping it quiet. And a very moving interview. I don't know if you've heard of it. It was very moving. It covered a lot of stuff. The Birmingham newspapers ran with Joe Lycett says croissants are better in Birmingham than France. That was the big news story. Absolutely unbelievable. So look, let's crack straight on. We've got quite a good guest for once. So let's see how it goes. He's probably best known for his appearance in 2014 on Big Brother's Bit on the Side. That is why we're here to see him. But what's he done since then? Nothing. Will you please welcome the amazing James Acaster, ladies and gentlemen. James Acaster. From Big Brother's Bit on the Side. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you remember Big Brother's Bit on the Side? Dermot O'Leary?
I do. Well, it wasn't Dermot O'Leary. Oh, it was Emma... What's her name? Oh. Yeah. And I'd said yes to... I remember thinking... I haven't watched it for years. I haven't watched it since the first one.
Yeah.
And I thought it. The first one, that was fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like watching it again. But I thought Big Brother's pretty cool. And someone asked me to do that. I was like, yeah, it'd be fun. I'll get to watch it again and like, I'll catch up with it and then go on and talk about it. And then I watched it, and I was like, oh, it's fucking horrible. Like, I was like, they're, like, deliberately manipulating these people and, like, tricking them into having, like, full meltdowns, and it's really irresponsible. And I got there, and not normally when you turn up on a TV thing, the first person who meets you is a runner, someone who, you know, is their job to, you know, take you around, show you where the dressing room is, get you a cup of tea, whatever. Very nice people. I thought that's who I was being met by when I got out of the car. And you can say what you like to runners and chat to them. So they went, did you watch the episode? What did you think? I was like, it's awful, isn't it? It's horrible. Like, what they're doing now is fucked. And, like, they should have a long look at themselves, the people making this show, because I think it's, like, morally absolutely disgusting. And they were like, OK, well, I'm the executive producer, and I'm... cool. And then they had to say, they sent someone in to talk to me before just going, all that stuff you said, don't say that on the show. We won't put that in if you say it on the show. So I messed around instead, but I still annoyed them because every time they kept going, like, they said, like, predictions of who's going to win. And I said, Nasty Nick. And they were like, okay. And then I went on to the next person, someone from Atomic Kitten. And then they... was saying, like, with each housemate, what's your prediction for each housemate? And going around each three, and every time it came to me, I just said whoever it was going to win. And it was nine of them or something at that point. So by the time it got to me, she was like, I wonder what this is going to be. I'd build up as if I wasn't going to say it. And they're going to win! And yeah. Like, no one in the room liked me.
That's good. That's the way you have to play it. I did it when Dermot O'Leary hosted it. It was probably quite a long time before 2014.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was quite unusual. Usually that before you have the interview, you'll like meet the person who's going to interview and they'll just have a chat through.
Yeah.
I went into the studio, he walked in, started the interview and walked out again and didn't talk to me at all before or after.
That's exactly the experience I had with the person whose name I don't know. So, Joe Watt. I don't deserve to have been met by them.
That must be what they do with being Big Brother, just like they to psych you out.
Yeah.
So they don't make friends with you.
Really getting your head.
I was the first person after Davina McCall to know that Nasty Nick was going to be evicted from the house because I was standing behind Davina McCall at the canteen at LWT. And she got a call and I said, and she was like, oh, wow. And I said, what's happened? She said, he's being evicted. So she died.
Wow, that must
so
have...
So I heard it from Davina McCall before the whole...
That must have been very exciting, Richard.
It was very exciting.
I mean, genuinely.
It's a piece of history.
Yeah, it's now it's like history. If you found out, you know, yeah. you know oh, he's not going to run. Boris isn't running. It was like that.
It was absolutely
come a long way since.
And I met Nasty Nick. I interviewed Nasty Nick about poker on my poker chat show, Poker Zone. From about 20... Must have been about 2008, 27... to 2007.
What was he like?
I can't remember anything about him.
Really?
I can't remember anything that happened. He probably says more about me and my life at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't really do any, you know, like he's Nasty Nick forever. He wrote like someone's initials on a piece of paper.
He was a little bit bitchy. A little bit bitchy. And now you look at where we are as a fucking society. You go on social media or whatever, you're like, oh yeah, we all hated Nasty Nick. But now it's like everyone is just garbage.
Yeah.
The way we speak to each other.
Nasty's always, can't escape that. Can't escape Nasty Nick, can you?
He will never get away from that. That'll be his whole life. That'll be what he's called at his funeral.
Yeah.
Is we all remember Nasty Nick. I mean, when he dies, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
His whole funeral is going to be people trying to avoid bringing it up. Everyone getting up to talk about it. And going, it's what he's best known for. It's like, yeah, but you can't say it. Everyone hated him. It's called Nasty Nick. It's ruined his life. Okay, I'll just do a eulogy about how much he liked poker.
Yeah, poker was a place, especially then, that just all the misfits went. I interviewed the coughing major from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and his wife, I think. I want to say his wife was there as well. I've kind of fancied his wife.
Did you?
I like a woman with a big nose, something to hang on to, you know.
Yeah.
And she's got a really impressive conk on her.
A great conch.
I remember her, but she might not have even been there. I think I must have been on drugs. Yeah. I don't remember being on drugs, but I think I must have been on drugs.
There must have been a time where he was deciding how he was going to cheat. And someone said, your wife could sneeze. No, don't fucking... That'll take out the entire room. Have you seen the conch on her?
He was very insistent that he didn't do it. And he was one of the people I slightly annoyed by. John McCririck,
yeah.
I would threaten to walk out because I was saying, you're only pretending to be childish. You know, it's just a game. He was a real prick. I'm glad he's dead. He was an absolute prick. Anyway, we're not here to talk about me and my... You know, people are sick of hearing about the Poker Zone interview shows. People love that.
News to me.
I don't know if you can watch them anywhere. I have been reading, and in fact listening mainly, to James A. Acaster's Guide to Quitting Social Media, which, I mean, I want to say I'm very much enjoying it.
Thank you.
Before I say everything else I'm going to say. It is an absolute fucking waste of my time.
Yeah.
I would like you to put that on the front as the quote.
Yeah.
What an absolute fucking waste of 7 hours of my life.
I've used a quote from you before from a book.
Yeah,
so people should maybe be able to catch up and go, how's Richard Herring feeling about it now? Waste of his time, this one.
I have to say, when I was telling you backstage, it's made me laugh an awful lot. I was doing parkrun on Saturday for the first time in a little while, and I'm not particularly fit at the moment, and I was struggling, and I got to a bit that made me laugh so much that I was aware that I was running amongst lots of other people. I had headphones on. They couldn't see what I was laughing at. So I was trying to run whilst really laughing, painfully laughing, and trying to suppress that laughter and assuming that everyone around me thought I was about to keel over and die as a result. It was absolutely excruciating.
Good advert for the book.
Yeah, so see that. I would describe it as a novel about a man who decides to quit social media and retreats into a fantasy world of madness.
Yeah. Correct.
I think it is a self-help. It's described as a self-help book. And like I've looked at the reviews on Amazon. Lots of people love it, I have to say. And I do love it. I think it's fantastic. Quite a few people are quite angry.
Yes. More than anything I've ever done, this has made people angry. I didn't expect it to make people angry. I thought I'd make it very clear that it was purely a comedy book and not a real self-help book, or it wouldn't really contain my thoughts and feelings about social media. I'll give it a stupid name that goes on and on forever. I'll dress like an absolute piece of shit on the front cover and do all this and look like, so it can't possibly be serious. And there's a lot of people who are like, wow. This isn't helpful at all. And you're like, well, I tried to flag it up, but fair enough. I mean, and then there are some people who haven't read it who get angry that how dare this comedian tell us how to live our lives? And you're like, if you read it, there's a whole bit in it where I'm just like talking about a postman pissing into a moat that's got an eel in it, an electric eel, and the current goes up into his pee hole and frazzes his knob. I don't think I'm helping anyone. I'm not telling you how to live your life. It's stupid.
It's the ultimate self-help book because you have to help. It doesn't give you any advice. You have to help yourself.
Yeah.
So if you've got a problem
clear.
With
I'll make that very clear in the pages.
It's very clear. It's sort of, you know, it parodies both people on social media and both people off social media, as well as all literature, I would say. I would say it's a parody of... I'd say it was a parody of the written word.
Yeah. But that's fair.
I really liked... The bit that was really making me laugh today was... it's basically about behaving in real life as you would in social media. If there's if there's any satire in it, that's the main...
Yeah, it's basically taking the whole thing of, like, you wouldn't do that in real life. It's taking that to the ultimate degree. And just everything you do on social media, and if you lived your life like that, what your life would be like. And it would be a stressful mess.
I very much enjoyed you reviewing things as they would be reviewed on Twitter. So doing it it's in a parish magazine.
Yes.
But just an actual review. I think I'd like to see this in newspapers. The review just being, oh my God, oh, what's he doing now? So just like as
the whole
tweets.
Thing caps lock as it's going on. Just like people tweeting along with TV shows. Yeah. Just doing TV reviews like that.
It's great.
And doing it in my mum's church magazine.
It's a strong recommend from me. Do listen. I'd say listen to it because it's always great to have James read it to you. It's like a special...
More also, nice detail, if you do, I'm going to listen to the audiobook, is that for like the first two books I did, plus I did two other audiobooks for other things. I did School Nutkin and James the Giant Peach.
Okay.
Pretty pleased with myself. Coincidentally, the same guy for all four, producing, working at different... publishing houses and everything, but he just happened to be there each time.
Right.
A guy called Chris. So I worked with him every time, really got on with him. He also like listened to my food podcast, so he knew my sense of humour, so he got the books. This is the first one where it wasn't him, and that guy did not find me funny. And he was on the other side of the glass for the whole... like that. And the amount of the stupid jokes that are so infantile and ridiculous... And I've got to look over at him, and he's like, "You happy with that?" Yep.
I did my audiobook first, then I did some extras for my audiobook. And one of the extras in my audiobook was me interviewing the puppet of my right testicle that I do a puppet show with to ask him about his part, the story.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad I did that last. Because... I had to do it just on my own with the man who'd quite enjoyed the book.
Yeah.
Just sitting in the studio and he just sitting through the thing and he just came and went, oh.
Yeah.
As I improvised a conversation with her.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I was just glad I didn't have this guy for the book where I reviewed albums for an entire book. I don't think he would have liked that at all.
Let's see what else I'm going to talk to you about. And that's it. That's the lot. It's all over. Let's mention you've done a Kickstarter, which has already succeeded. So congratulations on that. But tell us about the... it's still there and people can still... There's some good rewards and stuff. But you're putting together an audio comedy drama?
Audio sitcom. So it's something that we could only do as an audio sitcom. It would only work as that. And had the idea for it years ago, 2014 actually, when I went on Big Brother's Bit on the Side. Yeah. But I'd done a show where I claimed to be an undercover cop for the whole show, a stand-up show, and wanted to do a podcast where that character of an undercover cop who's undercover as a stand-up comedian has his own true crime podcast where he's sharing his wire recordings of the biggest case he's ever done with the audience. So it's a sitcom within a fake podcast.
Yeah, cool. What can people get for if they do... become Kickstarter? Because it's like $100,000 or something. You're a bit under that, but you're a bit over that now. So
$89,000 it was meant to be, and now it's like over $100,000. So
what are you going to do with that extra money?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. Unfortunately, we basically, when we asked for 89, that was the bare minimum we needed to scrape through and make something. Yeah. So now we just get to make it better.
Get to make it.
Which is annoying. So I was like, we get to like have a really big party at the end now. Like, no, we don't, James. We got to pay everyone properly.
What rewards can the fans get that will be worth?
Man, I just talking to Lindsay about this, who's the fantastic producer, executive producer. I don't know. We haven't even talked about titles on this, but she's brilliant. And we're talking about what rewards. So I've got to sit down. I've got to write like thousands of postcards to these generous pricks.
Yeah.
I've got to do a bunch of like cameo style things. So I think that's capped now because you know. Depressing, isn't it? Badges, you know, that's not for like the big spenders. Also, there's like live performances that we're doing of like read throughs of the script at the Bill Murray, where we're like, you know, when we're still drafting it, and we want to try it out. So we're going to do two nights of that. And if people want to, I think that's still open actually. If people want to donate, they can get just a ticket to that. And also, Nish Kumar's going to interview me at. The Just for Laughs festival about it, and Nish is also in the sitcom,
right?
So I'm going to try and get Nish to interview me in character, although his character is called Nish Kumar. He's a stand-up, he's a stand-up comedian who has a drug problem.
All the way. Well, it's great. I think it's a great way of doing it. I was doing it, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
Now I think you know it would be rude to do it now. Now you know we're making some money from the podcast, which presumably you are as well.
So
it is a great. I think it's a good way. It's nice to make sure everyone gets paid properly because a lot of things that go out online are you're just saying to everyone, come and do this thing for 2 months for nothing.
Yeah, so, yeah. I did feel a bit weird about it because I was like, I do have money, but then I looked at how much money. I was like. I have to ask people to help me actually, because if we've got to pay everyone proper. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the perennial thing. Like we've started not putting the videos of this out for free, which we did for a long time. So there's hundreds of free videos that cost us quite a lot of money to make, but luckily people donated to. But you'll still occasionally get people going, "Why? What happened to the free videos? If you can get them for 62p each,
yeah.
If you do this, no.
No way. But I'll never donate to Wikipedia. I did it once.
Yeah, I've done it twice.
I did it once, I'll do it. And then they get worse. If you donate, they're like, hey, we remember you you donated once, so that you'll do it again, right? It's like, motherfucker, I thought that you would not do it. I thought you'd leave me alone after this. I've given you some money, now just continue to tell me facts.
Yeah, they should put in there how much it is to never get contacted again.
Yeah. Here's the amount, and we'll leave you alone forever. Yeah. Great, there you go, have it, whatever it is.
That's good.
Can't remember how much I gave them the first time.
Good, well, everyone should go, can we, it's on jamesacaster.com?
.com, there's a link to it.
Yeah.
Also, if you just go on Kickstarter and put in my name, it'll be the first thing that comes up. The podcast is called Springleaf. And
it'll be out in 20. I mean, it's definitely going to happen now. So it'll be out.
It's definitely going to happen. I'm already writing it. I'm loving writing it. Very excited about it. And I mean, it's going to be all I'm doing for the next few months now. I'm kind of just trying to make it the main thing.
Great. And are you back doing stand up? There was some sort of discussion that you were might not do stand up again. Or
well, there wasn't really. I mean, it was there was like some things where during lockdown, obviously, all of us would get asked. Every comedian would be asked, like, how are you coping not doing stand-up at the minute? And I'd just honestly be like, oh, I really like it. I really like not doing it. Feels quite good. And they're like, will you do it again when it opens up? I was like, at the minute, I'd gladly not do it again. But I'd always say, but, you know, I might change my mind on that and I might do it in another 2 weeks. I might want to do stand-up. Yeah. But obviously, they'll cut that bit out of the interview and just be like, he's talking about quitting. He says he's quit. So then when I started doing stand-up again this year, a lot of comics would come up to me and go, hey, heard you've come out of retirement. I was like, don't tell people that. Because it makes me look like a prick if I'm like, oh, yeah, I retired. When? 2020. I came back. 2022, I came back. Just I was in retirement for a while. But now I'm out of retirement. So I didn't really. I was just like, I needed time away from it, and that coincided with a global pandemic. So
it worked out very nicely.
Pretty lucky.
And you've just been in America doing, is it, were you doing new stuff or were you doing the...
Yeah, new stuff. Yeah. So the show's called Heckler's Welcome, and they're told they're allowed to do whatever they want.
Okay.
That's the show. And I've got, you know, I've got an hour and a half of material that is all about why I'm asking them to do this and why I've decided that. But yeah, the top of the show is just that they're allowed to heckle. They're allowed to talk amongst themselves, be on their phones, go to the bar, go to the toilet. I won't go, where are you going? If they stand up. You know, sometimes I don't heckle at all. Sometimes the whole show, I get destroyed.
Yeah.
And it depends.
That's an interesting way to go, because it seemed, certainly last time I spoke to you, you seemed annoyed by people wrecking your shows by shouting stuff out.
Yeah, I was really annoyed about it. Really hated it, and that's why I didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't want to go on stage anymore, because every time I work really, really hard on a show for ages and ages and ages, and all the work in progress crowds are brilliant, because they're there, they love to see the process, and they want to see you making stand-up comedy, so they're great. And then you take it on tour, and it's a fucking nightmare. And it's just people shouting out poppadoms or bread repeatedly, just like over everything. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. Talking about having suicidal thoughts, and they're like, cheese board! Yeah, cheese board! Right, great. And you go, oh, I really worked hard on this show, and I seem to have worked hard on it to perform it to the worst people I could perform it to. And, you know, that tour was quite long. And by the end, I was like, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of, like, going out there for 2 hours a night doing a show I've worked really, really hard on. And people heckle me, people talk amongst themselves. Always there's some people with their phones on, just looking at their phone. You can see it lit up while you're on stage doing a bit. And you're like, well, this makes me feel like shit. And also, I would not keep any of those thoughts in my head. So, they're, you know, pretty much most comics I know hate all of that stuff, and it ruins it for them.
Yeah.
But they don't all on stage go, do you know what? You're not probably the shittest crowd I've ever fucking performed to. So I would do that every third gig if I was lucky. And just tell them they were a shit crowd and tell them this gig is rubbish, and, you know, single out individuals and be like, get off your fucking phone. And like, you know, and it would be horrible. And I'd come off feeling even worse and mainly beat myself up about it and be like, why are you, you know, just go on and just do the show. Why do you focus on all the people who aren't behaving? Most of them are. Most of them are there to see it, want to see a good show. They've paid money to see you. So I'd really, like, give myself a hard time. And at the end of the tour, because on every single tour that I've ever done, at the start I'd be like, right, this is the tour where you don't do any of that. You don't tell them off. You don't do that. Here we go. And then I'd do it within the first month of, like, a, you know, whatever, six-month tour. And then you're like, right, well, that's, we're fucked now, and that's going to be the whole thing. And I got to the end of the 2019 one and was like, you just, this is never going to stop. They're always going to keep heckling you. They're always going to keep talking while you're on. They're always going to keep being on their phones. They're always going to keep showing up late and, like, being like cocky pricks when you ask them where they were. Like, it's the whole thing's not going to feel nice. So you either quit or you figure out how to deal with this, because they're not going to stop.
Yeah.
And to stop, to kind of constantly think that they have to change when they are everyone in the world is unreasonable. And you just have to accept, every now and again, I will get an audience that is the audience that I always think to myself, I hope I perform to that audience. Sometimes that will happen. And the times where it doesn't, you just have to accept that that's what's going on that night, and you're there for work and you're getting paid. Yeah. And just do it. So, because all the things I was scared of were all of those things. So it was like, let's do a show where they're allowed to do it all, and you tell them they're allowed to do it all, and let's see if that makes you feel better. I didn't know if it would or not. And just pretty much straight away, it just felt better.
Right.
Because, like, I'd say they're allowed to do it, so then it's like they're not being dicks then.
Yeah.
Because, like, they were allowed to. So when they do it, it's like, you know, yeah, and some of them I talk to, some of them I ignore. They're told that at the top, that if I ignore you, it's not because I don't like your heckle, or, and if I don't like you, it's just because, like, you know, doing something else at the time, I didn't respond to you. Most of the time it is, if it's poppadoms or bread or something, there's no point responding to that. There's no funny thing to riff out of it, so you just ignore that and carry on. But it just didn't feel any more like they were being, you know, I don't know, they were being dicks because, like, yeah, you made the rules that they're allowed to do that. And,
yeah, it's an interesting way to cope. I sort of find it interesting that it's obviously like it's a result of success, really, because, like, for me, I just, the people who come and see my show, this is why I'm not successful. Once you get to a certain level of success, a different audience comes, right? People who come to my gigs just like my stuff and don't generally shout out.
Sure.
I mean, we'd have a new catchphrase that the audience can shout out. We can do it now if you want. There you go. so that might start happening and ruining the show. But, you know, it's sort of interesting because it seems to me you get over a certain level. Rich Hall was on, and he did, in America, he did these things called Sniglets, I think they were called, that became very big on TV.
Yeah.
But you couldn't do them on stage. They were just like the meaning of lift, basically, you know, that right, John Lloyd did, where it was alternate definitions of things that haven't got definitions. And he would go to gigs, and everyone would just shout, "Do Sniglets!" at him, and he couldn't do them, and it just ruined every gig.
Yeah.
So he moved to England, you know, moved to the UK, where no one knew about it. But your stuff is sort of world, you know, because of the podcast, the success of Off Menu, it's a worldwide success, right? So you're still getting that. And you've just been in America, and people are shouting.
Yeah, well, in America, they know Off Menu, they know the Netflix shows, and they know Taskmaster.
Right.
Taskmaster's the main one. If you, like, don't ever gig it there, Rich.
Okay, I wouldn't.
There's a Taskmaster as soon as you go on. Yeah. I just want to hear everything about Taskmaster. Why didn't you say hello to Alex Horn? That's what every gig. And every time I go, because it was funny. I'm a comic. You thick. But that's what I'm trying not to do. So I have a go at them. So you just be a bit more playful. But yeah, they want to know that. But yeah, so there's a bit of that sometimes. But,
is the Taskmaster just online though in America, or is it on TV?
I think it is. I mean, I didn't ask them because I didn't want to talk any more about Taskmaster.
I'm heading out there. I'm the champion of champions, mate.
You are champion.
I wasn't champion of champions when I talked to you last. I might have been, but I didn't.
No, you're champion of champions now. I mean,
I'd be like a god out there, right?
You will be a god.
I think they don't really listen to
my podcast.
I'm pretty
sure
there.
You're a fan favorite.
Did it with one ball. That's the thing. That's why that should have turned them round.
So did I, but I didn't make a big deal of it. Had it pop back in after the series.
I mean, you probably
took it out before the series to make me more aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Put it back in afterwards.
I thought you might have lost it when you were going around in circles.
Yeah.
When you hadn't read the.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let me ask you some emergency questions to get away. Actually, I want to, while we're talking about poppadoms or bread, how did it go with Richard E. Grant on Off Menu? Did you have a nice time with him?
Yeah, he let us put it out.
Yeah.
Very nice man.
Yeah. I thought he was a nice man.
Yeah, he's very nice.
Yeah.
You know, we had to edit out some stuff he said about you. But otherwise, it's good.
I'd love to, if you, no one's, because he was on Adam's podcast as well. I'd love to, you know. People ask him on Twitter a lot about why he hasn't put it out. So
does he respond to that?
No.
No.
Well, I don't. He blocked me on Twitter, but I follow him from another account.
He blocked. He blocked you.
Yeah.
Why? What did you do?
He blocked me on after he came on the show. It was lovely. People who were there, it was great, wasn't it? It was absolutely, there was nothing wrong in it. There's nothing that he hasn't done in anyone else's podcast.
Sure.
He seemed lovely. Then his people said, can we hear the podcast? I said, yeah. It went a bit weird. I tried to direct message him, say, hey, you know, it was really good. I hope you're not worried about anything. Blocked me already.
Great. Already blocked.
Yeah.
Respect.
Don't think, I don't know. He obviously just, you know, he just didn't like me. That's the only...
Oh, that much is very apparent. We don't need to scratch our heads about that one. He definitely doesn't like you.
But everyone else who doesn't like me still lets the podcast go out, right?
Yeah, they let it go out. And you know, often you learn why they don't like you, at least.
Right, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. But I'm glad it all worked out for you. This is a food-based one for you, because you like food, don't you?
I do.
What's the worst cheese that you'd still be prepared to eat?
I mean, is this you trying to get me to say knob cheese?
No, not at all, but that's interesting that you would be... that you would still be prepared to eat it.
Give it a go. I've never heard anyone dying of that.
Bit of smegma's never hurt anyone.
No.
Okay. Good answer. Let's something that came up from Jos Norris tweeting about remembering as a child. He has a clear memory as a child, being able to shoot electricity out of his fingers.
Yeah,
and I have a clear memory of going out and seeing the planet Saturn like as big as the moon in the sky.
Wow,
and a couple of other things. Do you have any childhood memories? You look back at them now and you realise they can't, but they're vivid.
I have a memory of floating down the stairs. Right. In Banbury.
Right.
And just getting to the top of the stairs and just going... And then just down like that and then landing on 2 feet and then walking...
Okay.
And not mentioning it to anyone. Walking into the living room and not saying to anyone, guess what just happened? That happened.
It's weird,
it was real, yeah.
Yeah. You got very clearly remember it. It's a weird thing. Good, yeah. I'm glad it's a good one. Do you think your obituary photo has already been taken? And what do you think it will be if it has been, or do you think?
I mean,
your most.
Well, it depends when I'm going to die, doesn't it?
It does. So, well, like, that's the point. Or you know, depends I guess you think
if it's already. If I'm going to die, if I die sooner rather than later, then and I hope it's. I hope it's like around between 2017 to 2018.
Yeah.
I was when I looked my best.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
So
I think your greatest work is yet to come.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that'll be posthumously released.
That'll be posthumously. Go back. I don't think they'll go back to there.
It'll be released after I'm dead. Still.
I don't know if it was now. If you died now, if I murdered you now.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd probably use a photo of us talking.
Yeah.
If I just go and stab you now, they'd probably just. Just before the incident, here's the...
Yeah, there'll be something like this.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot more photos of you, I think, everywhere.
There will be. They're probably...
Like, we never saw this coming.
That might not be the...
When you die, they could posthumously release the Richard E. Grant episode.
They could. Well, definitely when he dies.
When he dies, it's coming out.
Fingers crossed
immediately.
He goes first. I mean, he's moved agents. I reckon I could put it out.
You reckon?
We signed a contract. He's gone to a different agent. I don't think the agent he's left will make us uphold the contract.
There's legal loopholes, isn't there? Of like, you could, I think, go around with it like on headphones and play it to people individually.
Okay.
I think that's legally fine.
I can do that.
I read a book by a guy called Michael Burdett who found a lost Nick Drake tape in a skip.
Okay.
And he legally wasn't allowed to release it or put it out or play it in public, but he could play it to people on headphones.
Okay.
So he did that and took photos of people who were listening to this lost Nick Drake song.
I could do that and then just every now and again stop it and shout, "Watch Now TV!"
Yeah, yeah.
And then make some money off it. Yeah,
yeah, you could do that.
Yeah. I might do that.
I think you should make it that someone in this room can listen to it on headphones.
Yeah. Well, I thought of getting just Limmy, who's also fallen out with Richard E. Grant, but does an impression of Richard E. Grant.
Does he?
I could just write the whole thing down and we could just recreate it.
There you go. They cannot get you
on that. They can't get me for that. I mean, because also I can just tell.
That's brilliant.
I can also just tell all the story. I don't know what they, you know. I don't know if there's. I don't think it was one bit because we said, you know, I said to them, look, if we don't put it, anything out, people will go on about it forever.
Yeah.
So just put, even if it's 5 minutes long, let's put something out. Go, yeah. No, nothing.
You got to put it. You got to do that with Limmy. That reminds me of something that once I was on a WhatsApp group with it's just comedians, and it was a really funny WhatsApp group. and like it had been going for about a month, and it had been non-stop funny. Yeah. And everyone had their own little characters on the WhatsApp group that they were. And the most arrogant thing was when we started as a group of comics, genuinely going, "Should we book out a theatre and just all have the script of the WhatsApp?" And all take it in turns to step forward and read the WhatsApp group out. And I think after that, it lasted about a week before no one was like going on there anymore. We felt too ashamed that we actually considered that for a second. Right. Our WhatsApps are so good, we could charge for it. We'll all play ourselves.
Should definitely do that. Let's do a double bill of me and Limmy doing that and then you
me
guys.
Me and the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I text Whittacombe.
If you could go into Chrysalis and dissolve and come out as anything you would like, what would you come out of your chrysalis, out of the chrysalis as James A. Acaster?
Probably The Rock.
Yeah.
That's everyone's answer, isn't it?
not really.
I think that'd be most people's answer.
No, it's your answer, that's fine. You'd like to be a big, beefy, handsome...
Yeah, I'd like to not... I don't want to work for all that, so I'd like to just become muscly like him one day.
Yeah. Do you think if you worked at it, you could become as muscly as The Rock?
I think anyone could.
I'm not sure that's true.
I think
he starts from a certain level.
Yeah.
But then he works it up from there.
Well, I just got to get to that level. Yeah, and then I'll work up from there.
I don't think you can get to the level. I don't think you get to the... He starts as a pebble and then becomes a rock. I don't think you could get to be a pebble.
You think I'm a little bit of gravel? I could become a pebble and then get a rock. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think your comedy would be the same if you were a very muscular...
See how the Hecklin show goes.
That might change things. That might.
Yeah, yeah.
You just killed a few people.
Yeah.
First couple of people rip their head off and then the others go, okay.
Okay.
We better shut up.
He killed them.
Shut up and listen.
Not heckling.
Who is the most right-wing person you've ever been sexually attracted to? I don't know if I've asked you that.
Right-wing?
Right-wing, yeah. I've been into both Priti Patel and Suala Braverman, but only when they've been Home Secretary and been saying they want to deport people. The minute they've lost their jobs, not interested.
Not interested at all.
Suala Braverman lost her job, not interested. Next week, got it back again, interested again.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Do you go to a therapy?
No.
You want to bring that up to someone? the most right-wing person. There was a photo of Princess Anne when she was younger. She was fit.
She was fit. And I don't think I can say that a princess isn't right-wing, but she's very nice.
I think by default... All of them are right wing.
I don't think
you can be in the royal family.
I mean, I know. Like,
and be left. I think it's impossible.
I know we're comparing.
I think if you were left wing and you were in that fucking family and you continued to be in that family, you can't be left wing and be in that family.
She's nice, though. I mean, but it is comparative to her siblings, but.
I would hope so.
You know, she survived. There was a kidnap attempt. Do you know about the kidnap attempt on Prince Anne?
She was really badass about it. Yeah, good on it. But that's, you know, the epitome of right-wingers action films.
So the young Princess Anne. I think in The Crown, the young Princess Margaret. I mean, I think Princess Margaret would, if we're going to go...
I haven't watched The Crown.
Okay.
Because I hate them all.
Yeah. They don't come out particularly well, I have to say.
Good, but like still, I think I would just get angry. Yeah. I just think that if I watched The Crown, I would just get angrier and angrier. Now it's so bad, we've made a fucking entertainment show about it, but they're still in. We've still got a king and a queen. You talk to people from countries that don't have kings and queens, and you just feel embarrassed to go, yes, well, the king? What? Grow up. Do you live in Shrek world?
I was annoyed that they had a whole episode about Michael Fagan, who was the guy who broke into the Buckingham Palace and sat on the end of the Queen's bed.
Good
and
on.
I'd heard that he wanked in her ear. And nobody else has heard. No one else has heard this story apart from me and some kids at Fairlands Middle School. But they didn't. I thought the Crown, this is going to put the record straight.
Yeah. They chickened out.
Didn't do it. They made him a very relatable and nice figure.
Really?
Yeah. It's a good episode, but, you know, imagine if it just at the end he'd wanked in the Queen's ear.
Yeah, that would have been great. Actually, maybe I'll watch that episode.
Yeah. Watch the young Princess Margaret.
Yeah?
Yeah. Definitely. I think you'll like it. You are playing Felix, talking to The Rock. You are The Rock. You're playing Felix the Ironmonger in Seize Them.
That's true.
Yeah, is it a cartoon or are you being an ironmonger?
Live action, I'm an ironmonger.
They went to you for the ironmonger?
Yeah, they know when they want a good munging. I was the ironmonger, I was there for an afternoon.
Yeah.
That's how I like to do it.
Yeah.
Turn up, everyone else is like, you know, they're just slightly frayed at the edges and they want to go home. And you turn up in Wales and they put grease all over your face. And then you just do the same scene over and over again for 2 hours and then go home.
It's nice.
Yeah, really fun.
Is that coming out soon? Is it out?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have idea when it's coming out. I'll hold my hands up here. I don't know what the rest of the film is about. All I knew was that Lolly was in it. I was like, yeah, cool, you have to hang out with Lolly for a day. So I said yes.
Yeah.
Got to chat to Nick Frost for a little bit.
That's why Nick Frost gets all the roles that I would get if Nick Frost wasn't there.
I think that's what they said, was that you were second choice.
Yeah. Whenever I've auditioned for anything, Nick Frost has got the part, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well,
I'm not saying everything he's done I would have got.
No, what of his parts do you think you wouldn't have got?
Most of them, because he's still alive, but for how long? That's my question.
Be quite good if it was you in Shaun of the Dead, though, because you probably wouldn't have improvised the N-word.
That's true.
People don't like talking about that with Shaun of the Dead. It's an absolute classic. I love it. That one bit, you go, oh, let's sort that out now, shall we? Let's go back and take that bit out. And they go, it was improvised. Well, that's worse. It's the first thing he thought of. Take it out.
It was different times.
Yeah. But now's now, isn't it?
Yeah,
so you can snip it out now and put it out and go, the new edition. That one joke, isn't it?
And also you acted in Cinderella?
Just a bit.
What did you? What were you playing in Cinderella? You were a mouse, were you?
Well, listen, it's a tale as old as time.
Yeah.
I played a mouse that turned into a footman. Fair enough.
I think someone was probably saying that's Beauty and the Beast is what they were probably...
Oh, yeah, tell us all this time is Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. I actually didn't say it thinking I was referencing anything at the time. It's genuinely a phrase I use a lot.
Yeah.
And when I said it then and it got a bigger laugh than I was expecting, I thought, oh, shit, they think that I'm quoting Cinderella.
Yeah.
But I'm not. And some of them are going to be there going, that's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
But I think just let those... They're the kind of people who would write angry Amazon reviews about my book.
Yeah.
I got it 2 days before filming.
Yeah.
I didn't have to audition or anything because they had a dropout. John Mulaney had to drop out.
Oh, because he wasn't very well.
Yeah, it was during that, and that's not a secret now.
No, it's not.
But like during that time, so we had to drop out of it quite, like, you know, abruptly. And they were like, do you want to just come and play a mouse in Cinderella?
Yeah.
And I was really excited about that.
Yeah.
It's like, because Sony have got the rights to it, it's going to be a jukebox musical. So this is great. I'm going to be like the next, you know, greatest showman or whatever. And it was me, Ramesh, and James Corden as the mice. And I looked at the call sheet. It had all the names there. And it was like James Corden, James the Mouse, Ramesh Ranganathan, Ramesh the Mouse, James Acaster, John the Mouse. I'm like, everyone's going to know that this was recast. It's very obvious I'm not the first choice. It's like you've been in a film and you're playing Nick the Mouse or something. I was like, we can't do this. And they were like, well, what do you want your mouse to be called? I was like, Acaster. Because there was already a James. And, like, and they went, okay, we'll do that. And then they didn't do it, obviously. The film comes out, I'm John the Mouse on it. Also, we did hair and makeup, and I was in hair and makeup for longer than the other two. They were just in and out, and I'm there for ages. Like, why am I in a whole different hairstyle for me? I was like, and then by the end of it, I was like, oh, that's John Mulaney's hair. It's John Mulaney's hairstyle that they already had in the call sheet. That's what the John the Mouse has his hair like. So I sat there and it made me look like John Mulaney. Thank you very much to go and do that. But 2 days, it was a good laugh, and my mum really likes the film.
Good. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, you know, sit down with the kids and watch it, mate.
Is it Disney?
It's, no, it's Sony, isn't it? So it's on Amazon okay. Prime Original.
Okay.
They're hard to come by.
Check it out. So, look, you're big into music, which, frankly, music bores me, and yep. I would be glad if all music was destroyed.
Wow.
As long as poems still existed.
Poems?
If people could still... if you could still recite lyrics, and I'd allow it to be slightly melodic. Wow. And I'd allow a slight melody to the recitation of a poem.
Right. Well,
but otherwise, music's out. So we disagree on this, I think.
Oh, everyone would disagree with you. Whoever the poet laureate is right now would disagree with you.
I like words. Music's, you know, it's all right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
But you...
it's only the best thing in the world, but fair enough. Poems.
Not as good as words, though, is it, when you think about it?
There are words in music.
Yeah, but the words are the good bit in music, that's what I'm saying. So take out the music and just leave the words.
Just have the words. But that's what this is now.
Yeah.
I can't
this is
see
better
anyone.
Than music.
Yes, this right now, this yeah. podcast. Yeah. Okay. Well, pleasure to be guesting on a track with you.
You have released a single.
Yeah.
Called No, No.
Yeah. It's called No, No. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like a serious like piece of music, right? It's not like a...
Yeah, but also yeah. like I'm not taking myself seriously within it. So the group's called Temps. There's like 40 people involved.
Okay.
And I was the main person who was like organising it. And, you know, it was originally a way to pass time in lockdown, and it was really fun to like send music across the internet to actual proper professional musicians and get it back and then mess around and send it to another professional musician. And then the more it happened, the more like I was like, oh, I actually really like this music. And they were really liking it and everyone really got into it. And then I had to start thinking about, well, if we release this, the problem here is that I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And every time I've seen that a comedian is releasing music, I've not been excited about it. I've assumed that it's going to be shit. So it's a bit of negotiation there with myself of like, how do we do this? Do you release an album and you take it really seriously, which is never a good look for a comedian?
Yeah.
Or do you do it as a joke album, which does a massive disservice to these 39 other people who have played on this thing, and it's clearly not a joke? If you present it as a joke, it's not going to be funny enough to pass as a joke.
Yeah.
So instead what I did was I took everything seriously, but I myself dressed as a massive alligator with a pink top hat on. And I'm like, right, there's my part within that.
Yeah.
Is that I'm a party gator and everyone else still gets to be musicians. And I'm really happy with where it's ended up now. It kind of, you just try not to be funny and not to be serious and just let it be what it is. And I mean, in all seriousness, I've never been more proud of anything I've ever done.
Right.
Like, this album is like the thing I'm most proud of ever. But I don't expect that, you know, I don't know how it's going to be received by people at all, because we saw how me writing a comedy book got received. People weren't expecting that from me, apparently. So doing an experimental music project might be a bit jarring to people, but yeah, I loved it.
It's good. I think it's, you know, it's sort of, it is that, I as a comedy fan, and I remember when I was a kid, I always thought it was just weird if people went, even doing a comedy, I think, you know, I think there was people did sort of comedy music things, but you could see they really loved doing the the music, and they weren't really good enough to do the music, right?
Yeah.
So and that there's loads of great musical comedians that I love, like Tim Minchin and Bill Bailey, who are absolutely fantastic. But they're, you know, so it's not. I suppose it's just when someone who's a comedian sort of gravitate. You feel they would rather be a musician than a comedian. I think being a comedian is much better than a musician for the reasons I've given you just previously.
Definitely
about my feelings about
wrong.
Music.
Being a musician is better. But, I mean, crucially, I'm not singing.
No.
On this.
Okay.
Which I think is the main thing. When you tell people you're... So, when you're a comedian and you go, I'm doing a music project, I was like, oh, fuck. If he's singing on this, if it's like him and an acoustic guitar and he's singing about being in lockdown or something, like, this is going to be awful. And then it's like, no, don't worry, I'm not singing. I play drums on it and I've produced all the tracks, but everything else is played by people whose job it is to be musicians, and they've actually put effort into it and they want to do it. It's not a joke to them. So it's like, it's not like, that's why the group's called Temps, because it's not James Acaster doing music. So something I'm involved with and have, like, you know, I've done the bulk of the organisation for it and I've produced it, but like, it's not like, you know, this is my thing. I'm the face of it because I'm the one who's happy to do all the promo.
Yeah. And you were in bands before you were a comedian.
I was, to be fair. Yeah. But, you know, hopefully it'll just speak for itself and that'll be it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that currently you're all thinking it's going to be shit. Temps.
Is the album called?
The album isn't out yet. Our album comes out in the spring, and I don't think I'm allowed to say the name yet.
Okay.
Got a fucking label involved, mate.
I've got you here, and people have started fucking heckling my show. That's started asking their own questions.
Like, feels good.
But the track's called... question. I ask the fucking questions in this, David Frew. Just because I know your name doesn't mean you can ask what the. Being a comedian is better than being a musician, definitely. The best job in the world.
It was just easier.
It's easier to be a comedian.
Was it easier? Yeah, it was easier to be a comic, so I did it.
It's interesting that you've done your show about your book and your BBC Sound show about 2016 being the greatest year for music, but it feels to me like you came back to music in 2016, partly, right? So you hadn't really listened to much.
Yes.
Do you think psychologically there's something that was going on in your life in 2016 that made music more important to you, so that's why you feel this? Because it's clearly nonsense that one year's better than any. It's all just bang, 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 isn't it?
The whole book and the whole podcast that I did about 2016 being the greatest year for music of all time all starts with I had a breakdown.
Yeah.
And so this is why.
So music's like, you know, but that's where music's fantastic.
Yeah, but it's subjective, isn't it? So the reason why I've always said it's the greatest year for music of all time is because my favourite type of music fans to wind up are the ones who think there's a definite...
Yeah.
These are the best albums. This is the best year. Blah, blah, blah. So when you say 2016 is the greatest year, they all go, 1971! And they get angry. And you go... And what's fun about it is that I've bought over 700 albums in 2016. So every time they get angry and they start listing albums and I'm like, okay, that's five. I can give you 700, mate. And they're like, no, because there weren't 700 albums out in 1971. I was like, well, that sounds pretty shit to me. That doesn't sound very good. Not many even came out that year. And they're like, oh, but they were so influential. It's like, yeah, all these albums are really influential. You just don't know them. You're not up to with current music anymore. And then they really get...
But that's the good thing about it, I think, as well, because so many people think that, you know, don't equate the best year of music being... when they were 18 and their life was really exciting and fun, and now they're 55 and their life is meaningless. Yeah.
They've stopped listening to music.
Yeah.
So that's why. And so for me, it was rediscovered. You know, I just had the same albums that I'd always listened to. And then I suddenly got into new music and realised there was all this incredible stuff being released every single day. And I just wasn't aware of it. And actually, it's all incredibly exciting because it's moving things forward right now. And it's new sounds right now. And this is great. And it's really funny when you talk to someone who just wants to listen to the music that they listened to in their 20s and that's it. And they try and argue you on it. Like, their argument holds any water whatsoever. Where they're like, no, because the stuff now is rubbish. Do you listen to it? No. But then your opinion is invalid. Yeah. I've listened to the albums you've said. And I like them, but not 700 of them.
But do you think the same's true of comedy? It feels to me like comedy is in a much more exciting place now than I think it maybe has ever been in. And like some of the, you know, I think your last special is one of the best things I've ever seen. Joe Lycett's last special. Joe Lycett's special is like, you know, on another level as well. Yeah, you know, there's lots of different things coming through. And again, lots of people throw back. The thing with comedy is you throw back to comedy and most of it doesn't work. If you go back, let's go back to 1970. And oh, no, let's not.
Doesn't stop a lot of people from suggesting it. A lot of suggestions of it. Every time you talk to anyone, fucking, what do you think of comedy now? Because you can't say some stuff now, can you? Actually, you can say more than you used to be able to. Because more people are allowed to do it. No, but... yeah.
Well, you're the start of your show where you take the piss out of the guys who say, you know, who say the unsayable and talk about...
Yeah, that hasn't backfired.
You would think it would do something to stop that happening. You know, it's kind of such a recognisable trope.
Yeah,
you'd think those guys would go, oh, fuck, we are a bit embarrassing, let's not...
I feel like an idiot for doing that bit.
Do you?
Yeah, all I've done is promote Gervais. That's all I've done. I thought, oh, this is a good bit, it's just watertight, this makes my point, blah, blah, blah. All that happens is that every time he does anything like that, the clip does the rounds, which just promotes him. If I'm interviewed by anyone, they don't mention him in interviews and they make him the headline still of my interview. Yeah. He's just got more promo out of it. Anytime you mention a comic by name and you want to call them out for stuff, all the press really care about is like shifting, you know, getting clicks and all that. So they just make him the headline because he's massive. So he just gets bigger and bigger and bigger off of doing this material. And the narrative, obviously, from his side and from his fans is that he's being silenced, and that is not. The more he does that, the more his stock goes through the roof because he's getting free promo all the time. Like, I did an interview recently and they asked me about, like, would you ever work with a comic who you fundamentally disagreed with? And I was like, well, it depends what it was. But probably if I thought what they were saying was, like, pretty dangerous, then no, I wouldn't work with them. But, you know, if I just disagreed politically or whatever with someone, I probably would still work with them. That was it. The headline was James Acaster and why he would never work with Ricky Gervais. And you're like, oh, what the fuck? But also, you talk to these journalists beforehand and they're often quite progressive people who are like, oh, well done on that bit or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, if you want to get rid of that stuff yourself as a journalist, stop pulling this shit. Like, stop making it about Gervais every 5 seconds. And I know I've said his name a lot. But, like, you know, like, I just feel like an idiot for doing that routine the way I do. You know, I still stand by the logic of why I named him. Because the whole point was you're comfortable about making fun of this group of people, but you're not comfortable making fun of this guy.
Yeah.
So what does that say? But, like, all that's fucking happened is that he's got more and more... clicks, and there's been more stuff towards him. So yeah, I feel like a bit of a fool.
I think he would have done all right anyway.
I don't know, man. Who knows?
He's very. I find him so. You know, well, we won't talk about it. Won't talk about it just in case I get him on. It's not going to happen.
Pop him on bread, Ricky. I can't wait to ask him that.
We ever talked about your? We're going to wrap up soon, but have we ever talked about your you being a Christian child,
a Christian boy? Yeah. Well, I don't know if we have talked about.
No,
it,
it's yeah. quite. Because I was brought up as a Christian as well.
Yeah,
I think maybe it sounds like maybe you were more so than, or your family was more so than mine. Was it quite serious for your family?
Maybe it was like a you know. Like a community centre church with no particular denomination,
right.
Rock band, cool vicar with one thumb in the pocket, like, you know, doing a sermon, everything's groovy. And but, you know, there were definitely, like, downsides to the church that I wasn't, like, aware of as a kid. And then when I grew up, I kind of saw them a bit more. And, it's mad. Like definitely, I would say, I've always said my parents are really good examples of people with faith, and they're very, like, they don't judge other people. They adapt and change their beliefs as they go on as well, and are progressive. And so they've always, like, being raised by them is great, and, like, really, like, I think just had a lot of positive effects on me. but being raised in the church, in a C of E school, even in the Scouts, which is like even weirder in terms of Christian stuff. I think that like took a lot of like flushing that out my system. Yeah. And all the obviously just all the cliched stuff everyone goes on about, feeling guilty about everything, thinking everything's your fault about stuff, like a lot of that. I talk about it a bit.
What point did you start questioning? Because I remember questioning it quite early.
Oh, I questioned it early, but I really stuck with it, trying to convince myself. I think somewhere in my early to mid-20s, I completely went, okay, I've let it... But it was gradual.
Right.
It was really just bit by bit. And maybe I don't believe in this bit now, and I don't believe in hell. That seems a bit horrible, and I don't believe... And then just gradually, until all I was left with was the sexism and homophobia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I mean, because it wasn't a groovy church we went to. It was a kind of C of E, kind of quite old fashioned.
Yeah.
So similarly, my parents. So I think both. I've tried to. My plan with my father is to just get to just the point he's about to die and convince him that God doesn't exist, so that if he dies and goes to heaven, he won't get in. Even though he's lived a perfect Christian
that's
life.
That's a good prank.
So I'm trying to convince them. I think my mum is less into it now than she was.
Well, I think anyone who's
but they're
proper,
very good people. You know, they are very good people.
Yeah, I think most people who are proper devout Christians, in the sense that they really commit to the whole just literal thing. If there's a heaven and a hell, they're fucked because they're not good people, and that will be funny.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason I would hope there's a heaven and a hell, is that anyone who lived by the letter to the book and is like uses it as an excuse for being homophobic, for being sexist, or for being judgmental and all kinds of shit. I hope they do get there and go, I did it by the book, and they went, yep, you're a cunt, and then like down. That's the only reason I would like that to be true. It would be pretty funny. Even though I would know that I'd probably be going to hell too, it'd be worth it to go down with them. I'd be falling at the same time.
I just, you know, it can't be that bad, hell.
No, it can't be that bad.
Can't be that bad.
No, why not?
Because, you know, you just, after a while, it wouldn't matter anymore, would it? You'd just been in agony.
I worry it would always matter. I worry that it would matter for all of eternity.
Yeah, that seems
and,
too much.
I would, then that would really sink in early on.
Yeah.
How long this is going to matter for. And that would make it worse, that knowledge.
The knowledge it was going
that this is never going to be okay and normal. I'm never going to be blasé about this. The instant I get okay with them shoving hot pokers in my eye sockets, they're going to up the ante and do something even more fucked to me.
But if the devil is against God, why does the devil willingly run God's penal system for him?
Yeah, completely. Just doesn't make any sense.
I think you'll get down there and go, well done, mate.
And he
come
punishes the people who didn't follow God.
Yeah.
That sounds like the biggest God lover in the world. He should be like, welcome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for not doing any of that stuff. I really appreciate it. That was my mission. I don't like him and the way he runs stuff, so thanks for not doing that. He should be punishing the people who did follow God.
Yeah, exactly. Really. Should be grabbing them out of heaven.
Yeah, and going like, I said no! But yeah, I don't know. Right. I
mean, it doesn't make sense, does it? That's
no, I don't think it's
a
real.
A tiny child can see it. Someone getting to 20 and still believing something must be a fucking idiot.
Yeah. I was really, really heavily convincing myself for all of that. I read a book by a guy called Ravi Zachariah.
Right.
Really tried to convince myself with that book. It's like, I can't even remember. There was like just loads of little stories of stuff in his life. And he'd go, do you see what happened there? And like little allegories and stuff. And I was like really gripping onto it.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know.
You realise actually he just seemed like a nice man who met some nice people and told me people were nice.
Yeah.
He seemed like proof of anything.
I think I still, you know, once it's ingrained in you in childhood, it's really hard to shift it. So even when I did Christ on the Bike and I was 33, there was part of me.
You're in trouble. Thinking, I'm going to be in trouble for this.
Be doing this.
Yeah, going to be in big trouble. Yeah. Well, still sometimes if I say Jesus Christ, I think, Stop saying that as much, James. Tone it down a little bit.
Yeah. Look, are we gonna see this the show in the UK? You're gonna be doing the show that you've just.
Yeah, I had a phone call about it today. To try and sort out. I want to do residencies and not a tour. So I want to do little like 3 or 4 days in different cities and do that next year. So we're gonna try and figure out probably the second half of next year and first half of next year. Occasional like London work in progress, working it up because it's still not where I want it to be yet. But yeah, hopefully.
And you're gonna write another crazy book.
I don't know if I write another crazy book just yet. I've got no book plans. Writing-wise, it's the audio sitcom and just really focusing on that. I've got an album to promote because I'm a musician now.
Oh, you're a musician.
And I'll do this live show. That's it at the minute.
That's enough.
And off-menu. I'll still do off-menu event, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
pays
the bills,
man. I'm sure your bitch photo hasn't been taken yet. Because I'm going to let you live.
Thank you, Richard.
I've decided to let you live. It's a new feature of the show. If I don't like the guest, I kill them at the end.
Wow, you should have told me that before I came out here.
It's pretty cool.
I wouldn't have made fun of you for Taskmaster.
And, you know, what you... I love that jury duty sitcom you did. Like, there's been stuff all the way through that has been just, you know, it's... Chef's kiss.
Very kind. Thank you.
But I love the chef's kiss bit in your book. So, ladies and
gentlemen. Oh, yeah, that is a good bit, actually.
That is a good bit.
It's a good chef's kiss joke in the book.
And it's... thank you very much for coming on again onto our couple.
What's the chef's kiss joke? It's about someone who... They dated a chef, and the chef insisted every time they kissed them on the...
you dated a chef... It's very good. It's a very look. It's a brilliant, but you can. But don't put that. It's a brilliant book. Don't take that and put that on the front. Say the thing about it being.
Yeah, it's a waste of your life.
Waste.
It's a waste of your life.
But all books are. That's why it's a. All books are a waste of time. Everything's a waste of time.
Yeah,
we're just wasting time here. Thank you for wasting it with us. Thank you very much. The amazing James A. Castle, gentlemen. Thank you. We'll be back next week. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, James Acaster. Thank you so much to Scant Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm also indebted to Chris Evans, not that one or that one or that one. Thank you very much to the Leicester Square Theatre for having me. It's been quite good. Thank you also to Kathleen McKeegan for her fantastic website, rahulastapa.com. That is an invaluable research tool for me. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not listen to another episode of Rahulastapa right now? Go on, what else are you going to do?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.